Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WYNNBet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home for free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports gambling. Make sure to head on over and subscribe to our profile at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. We're also brought to you by Roman. Roman is the straightforward way to take care of your ED. Head on over to getroman.com/SGP for $15 off your first month. That's getroman.com/SGP. And finally, we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. From April 29th to May 4th, if you deposit on Underdog Fantasy, you have a chance to win $1 million in their best ball contest. That's right, $1 million. Sign up now at UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. That's UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And of course, if you are listening to this in the SGPN feed, first of all, thank you for listening. We really appreciate each and every one of our listeners. But we will not be in this feed much longer. If you actually go down to the link in the show notes, you can find our unique MMA gambling podcast feed. You can also obviously search for it wherever you listen to podcasts. We will be moving there permanently. We'll be in both places for a little while, but you want to make sure you are subscribed to the MMA gambling podcast feed, the unique one for our show. While you're there, of course, subscribe and make sure to leave us a nice little comment and a nice little rating because it certainly helps us out. So once again, we are in the SGPN feed now, won't be for long, and in the meantime, enjoy the show in both places.
Thank you for allowing us back into your degenerate ear holes. It's the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 33. I will be your host, Jeff Fox. I am a writer and editor at Sports Gambling Podcast, and I run the MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com. I implore you to head over there and at the very least enter our pick'em contest for this week's event, and you can win yourself $50 anywhere you want in the world, within reason. Thanks to our good friends at Sports Gambling Podcast Network. So, like I said, episode 33, and hopefully you're listening to this on our dedicated feed for this podcast, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. If you are not and you're listening to it on the main Sports Gambling Podcast Network feed, please find us, find our feed, and subscribe to the new feed at MMA Gambling Podcast, because eventually we will not be on the main feed. They want to get us fist fighting degenerates off of their feed, apparently. So make sure you subscribe, and thank you to everyone who has so far. We're getting lots of good results and whatnot, and we're lighting up the charts all over the world. So thank you for everyone for listening up to this point. Most of those years, probably most of the listeners probably are here because of my associate host, the brains behind all of this, the straw that stirs the drink and all that stuff. They call him Gumby, but he knows nothing about the show he's revealed, and he doesn't even know the Eddie Murphy Gumby skit. So he's a bit of a fraud, but I love him anyway. That would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hi, Dan.
Well, you are certainly in a good mood today because I'm the talent of the show now. And did I just get a Reggie Jackson reference as well?
You did.
I'm Reggie Jackson good. Man, I'm going to hit That means I'm going to hit four or three homers in our game today in these picks. At least three homers.
three out of 12 fights. That's pretty much your rate. Now I'm getting back to normal now. That's pretty much your rate of
rightness. I couldn't expect it to last.
I don't know what was going on there. It was strange, but yeah. If you've listened to the show for the first time, the dynamic is I'm the bully that is mean to Dan. Dan's usually nice. Sometimes he fights back, but he's usually too polite. And thankful that I've given him another job. Basically, is what it is. He needs to feed his children. So, but yeah, I just messed things up there and was actually kind of nice. I was kind of that may be what I'm like off the air, but I'm not saying that that's what I am off the air, because I might be a prick there too. What else was I going to say? What else? Other ridiculous thing was I going to say? I can't remember. You can count on Dan probably saying oof at least a couple times. I tend to make bad jokes and he tends to oof at them, which is probably the safest reaction to have to them. Also, yeah, I remember what I was going to say. If you're listening for the first time, thank you. And the main dynamic is I get all my picks right, Dan gets all his picks wrong, and then I make fun of him, and we move on to the next week, right? Pretty much?
I will ask, if we're going to start with at least accusations like that, that we probably go to the numbers, because I think somebody has a dollar advantage over somebody else.
Dan hit a plus 270 dog. That's pretty much it.
You didn't really let me get that out, right?
Like Dan is money-wise, he's $340 ahead of me, so that covers it. That 270, I lost 100 on that fight. You won 270, so that's our spread right there.
That's it. It's just that fight.
But I'm hitting at 55%, and I'm on an upward swing. I went 9-4 last week. Dan is back to his middling self, mediocre self, 5-5, and then 6-7 last week. So maybe he'll turn around this week. I found this week's card kind of hard to handicap a lot of the fights. So did you find the same, or did you have clear choices?
No, I found it extremely hard to handicap, and especially, the first fight we're going to get talking about in just a second is a fight made from two failed fights, which
right, yep.
I think makes it even harder to talk about, because, right, like, sometimes you can be like, oh, well, this fighter has had a full camp preparing, and this one took short notice, or this one has been preparing for this guy, and this guy is short notice. These guys have both been preparing for very different fighters than you're about to see, too. I'll talk a little bit about that when we get to it, but that one's a weird one. You got two guys who looked terrible in their debut after that. You got somebody who fought high level of competition in their first fight and somebody who doesn't belong in a weight class. Just very weird up and down careers on a lot of these guys. And weird style matchups, too, I would say. So, yeah, there's right. So many weird things going on here.
And they're, unlike pay-per-views, tend to be a lot easier, at least on paper, to pick stuff, because it's usually established fighters or people we have a good idea of how they look in the cage. But that's another thing with these fight night cards. There tends to be, like in this one, there's people that we really probably don't have a really good read on yet as to how they're going to look in the UFC and or how they look versus certain style matchup, like Dan was saying, or a certain weight class and all that type of stuff. So without any further ado, actually, let me tell you about WynnBET, and then we'll actually jump right into this week's ESPN fight card. So WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today, where you can see odds for pretty much every sport you're looking for. So get in on that. All right, the card that we're dancing around without actually saying what it is. I'm going to say his name properly. I know I popped Dan last week, but by saying his name wrong. But it is UFC on ESPN, Reyes versus Prochazka.
Oh, he nailed it. The guy comes straight out of the gate, coming out hot.
Of course, I heard someone on the Prelim Picker podcast say Prochazka. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. It is Prochazka. So it's the UFC and ESPN Reyes versus Prochazka, UFC Fight Night Reyes versus Prochazka, UFC on ESPN 23, UFC Vegas 25, and it's probably UFC Fight Night something too, UFC Fight Night 180, 190, Anything else you want to call it, Dan? You sometimes come up with good nicknames. UFC no, weird?
Mean, yeah, weird you, UFC weird style matchup.
Weird. Okay, UFC fight now. Weird style matchup. So there we go. All right, let's kick things off. Wikipedia's got the middleweight fight first, but I think everybody else has got the featherweight fight that Dan was hinting at, so we'll do that one first. It would be featherweights. Luke Sanders versus Felipe Colares. Now, they, as Dan said, they both lost opponents last minute, so they are they were both looking for dance partners, so voila, here we go. Now, were they both supposed to fight? No, there was one fight supposed to be featherweight and one supposed to be bantamweight, these guys? Do you know that or not?
So I'm pretty sure Colares was supposed to be at bantamweight, if I'm
right,
not
right, yeah, okay,
mistaken.
That's what it said.
Because, you know, like, he has fought Montel Jackson, Geraldo de Freitas, yeah. those guys are all bantamweight. So I think he is coming up in weight to fight Luke Sanders.
Right, okay, so that's right there. There's a nugget right there for all you people. He should be the smaller man, you would think here, at least weight-wise. So let's break it down in the stats, and we'll see. So Colares, 9-2, two knockouts, five submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's got two decision losses. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He's basically swapping wins and losses back and forth. He lost his last fight. The last fight was back in January of 2020, so he's probably would take any opponent at this point, regardless of weight class or who they are. He actually will be the longer man here. He may not be the thicker guy when they actually step in the cage, but he is 2 inches taller and has 2 inches of reach on Sanders. He also has grappling stats in his favor. He's a plus 128 dog. As for Cool Hand Luke Sanders, who I believe formerly was Mr. Becky Lynch, I think. Do you know rumors like that,
oh,
Dan?
Oh, that's right. So I
yeah, that's right.
She's a WWE
man. I believe she is. Yes, a lady. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't. I think it's she's post my understanding of WWE. But yes. I believe he was, or maybe still is.
No, he's not.
Oh, she's
married to Seth Rollins now. Do you know that guy?
I don't know that guy either.
Good. It's good that you don't know these things. And they just had a baby. I know all this stuff, but I haven't watched it for years. Honest, everybody. Anyhow, he's been in tailspin. Luke Sanders has since then. It's what I'm getting at. I think he must be heartbroken or something. So anyhow, he's 13-4, seven knockouts, two submissions, 3-4 in the UFC. But like I said, he's been swapping wins he's been in a slump. So he's been swapping wins and losses back and forth the last four fights. Win-loss. Last fight was a loss for people keeping track at home of the pattern there. It was a submission loss, and Colares actually has five submissions. So there's another little hint. Wonder who we're going to pick here. Before the UFC, he was 1-0 in Strikeforce. He's a year younger. He has the striking stats in his favor, and he's six times more active striker than Colares in terms of landing strikes, which is an insane rate of striking. He's at minus 160. I think I'm going to go with Cool Hand in this due to the size and the striking acumen. Your thoughts, Daniel?
I'm actually going to go with Colares on this one, believe it or not. And the reason is, from a couple of things you said, the length being a disadvantage to Luke Sanders, I think, is a big piece of this.
Yep.
You also have to remember Luke Sanders, while he has fought at flyweight before and has fought plenty of fights at flyweight, his last fight was actually a catchweight at 140. So he seems to be attempting to come down in weight if he was not full on. He actually did fight Hani Yaya down at bantamweight, too, at one point in time. So he's fought at featherweight, and he's fought at bantamweight, and the fight with Damon Jackson that he was supposed to have was supposed to be at featherweight. So he has fought bigger, but he's not that much bigger, and the reach disadvantage to me is even more problematic for him, because if you look at his losses, you're right, they're grappling, but a lot of times too, they're grappling that he initiated. The Yuri Alcantara loss was grappling he initiated. Like his willingness to grapple with Hani Yaya, which, like, you can't be upset about getting submitted by Hani Yaya because he's amazing, but, like, you can be bothered by the fact that he chose to grapple. So he just seems like one of those guys who wrestles quite well, and then that's not a good idea for him. So I worry about that with Colares, and then on top of that, I worry about the length difference. You know, like, if he does get reckless, is he going to be able to get inside enough? And you're right, he does have better accuracy. I'm just not sure that plays well against a guy like Kolaris who can bang a little bit. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Felipe Kolaris here with a little bit of a dog pick right out of the gate.
No, nothing wrong with that. But as for the stats, Sanders lands over 6 strikes a minute. Kolaris lands 1 strike per minute, and he gets hit 3 times per minute. So I don't like that.
But to be fair on that, too, let me give people some context for that. So he did just come off of fighting Montel Jackson. Montel Jackson, notoriously a very strong wrestler, took him down 11 times. Okay? First of all, Montel Jackson, we don't have to worry about Luke Sanders taking him down 11 times because he's not as good of a wrestler as Montel Jackson. But in that fight, it lasted 15 minutes. He went the distance with Montel Jackson, and he only landed 7 strikes, largely because he was on his back the whole time. That does fuck up your stats quite a little bit there.
No, very true, very true. I don't have super, super strong feelings on this. I'm still going with Sanders, but no shame in taking Kolaris, if you rather. Now, this fight should be kicking off around, I forgot to tell you the start time, should be around 7 p.m. Eastern. That's as of now when the fight card is set to go down on Saturday. The prelims are on ESPN2 and ESPN+. Main card on the same, ESPN2 and ESPN+. I think I might have changed. I thought it was on regular. Big ESPN, but perhaps not. The main card is starting at 10 p.m. So there you go. We got that out of the way. So, all right. We differed already, which should make fun viewing come this weekend. So, middleweight's next. Andreas Michailidis versus Katie Boulard. Another thing I forgot to mention off the bat. I don't think we have any chunky guys this event, right? None jumped off the page at me, which is sad.
No, I don't think so. All the guys at bigger weight classes are like chiseled giants.
Right.
You know, like Dustin Jacoby, yes, we'll talk about later, is built like a house, or Yuri Prohashka is built like some sort of skyscraper.
Yep. Now, the reason I thought I'd mention that here is because we don't have chunky guys, but we do have my fellow Canadians, which is another trope of ours, me fading on all the Canadians on the fight card. So we've got 3, I think, at least. And here's the first one, will be KB Boulard against Michailidis in this middleweight fight. Boulard, 8-1, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions. He won his first 8 fights to get into the UFC, and then he lost his UFC debut where he got TKO'd. He will be the bigger man here, 4 inches taller, 2 inches reach, and also 3 years younger, so he's got some significant advantages there. He's at plus 200 right now. Michailidis, 12-4, 7 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times, though, so all 4 of his losses are via knockout, so that's something to note. He also got TKO'd in his UFC debut, but it was against another uber middleweight prospect, Modestus Bukauskas. Before that, he won 3 straight fights. We're talking very small sample size of stats. Both guys have only fought once within the UFC octagon, but he does have the striking stats in his favor. Michailidis, that would be. And he's in his one lone fight, he was 4 times more active of a striker than Boulard. He's at minus 260. That's a big line, but I'll be taking him regardless.
Yeah, I'm going to take Andreas Michailidis here as well. I would say this, too. It's worth noting that fight with Modestus Bukauskas happened on short notice, up at light heavyweight.
Right.
And the stoppage was really weird. For people who don't remember, he definitely got banged up in that first round when Bukauskas took him down, and he looked a little bit worse for the wear. The referee told him to stand up, and he went to just reach for the cage to use that to kind of prop himself up or to help himself up. And somebody opened the door right as he did it, and he fell out of the cage. And the refs called it off, like he couldn't stand up or didn't know how to stand up. And do I think it was a bad stoppage? Not necessarily. He was getting beat up pretty bad. But on the same token, like, he probably was about to go into the second round against Modestus Bukauskas at light heavyweight. Now he's coming down a division to a guy who got jabbed out. That TKO was straight up by a jab from Tom Breese. You can't feel real good about KB Buller in this fight. And I would say this, too, about Michailidis. Michailidis is electric on the feet. Like, if you've gotten to see him in an actual middleweight bout back when he was on the regional circuit, the dude throws spinning thing after spinning thing and hook kicks and question mark kicks. And, dude, he's got such a fun arsenal of punches and kicks he throws. Dude, it's just so much fun to watch. And I think KB Buller had a tough time getting on the inside and boxing with Tom Breese, which You know, Tom Breeze, I largely think, is a guy who prefers to grapple anyway, or should prefer to grapple anyway. He's going to fight a more dynamic striker this time. He's going to fight a guy who was willing to go toe-to-toe with Modestus Bukauskas at light heavyweight. You know, I think Mikulaitis is going to win this, and to be honest with you, I think he's going to knock out Buller, too.
There you go. You got a prop, everybody. Yeah, I didn't really like matching up two top prospects like they did in Mikulaitis and Bukauskas's fight there. But, yeah, I think he's a heck of a prospect. So we are both going with him in this one. And that's one Canadian that I say do not take, like, as per usual. Dan had a guest on one of his other podcasts this week, Canadian, on Prelim Picker, and he felt obligated, I think, to pick Canadian. So I am the opposite. The money is in
He said he felt obligated to pick him, and then he still didn't pick Buller. So, you know,
that's true. Right? There you go. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And not for anything, too. It was Manpreet Jazz who was assisting me, who is of Indian descent as well. And right. It was an Indian Canadian guy he was picking again. So, I mean, like, if you feel like you have to support your countrymen and support, you know, on multiple levels, and you still don't pick him, like, yeah. Hey, here's your sign right here.
Very good point. Very good point. All right, women's strawweight next. Luma Lukbunmi versus Sam Hughes. Before I break it down, what's her real name, Lukbunmi? Do you know her real name?
Oh, yeah, it's, oh, man.
That is not her real name.
I looked it up this week, too. Man, I almost had a feeling that you were going to ask me, too. I looked it up on her Wikipedia page. Lukbunmi is a reference to her dad's Muay Thai school, though. I do know that.
Yeah, Muay Thai fighters do that. They tend to take on the last name of whatever school they're from, so you see a lot of fare taxes and stuff like that, which is kind
of
cool.
A lot of sit-your-tongs.
Right, yes, yes. Yeah. So her real name is Sufisara Conlak.
That's kind of – I don't know if that's more bad. I think it's more badass.
Yeah,
I think I like that.
And she's also fought under the names Kanda Poor Muengpech and Kanda Kokite Gym. So that must be a gym. Kokite Gym, Kanda Kokite Gym, and Kanda Poor Muengpech. So there you go.
Well, you took a name that you did great with, by the way, Luma Lukbunmi, and you just decided to say all of her other names
all
so
her
that
names.
You could
well,
screw
there
them
you
up.
Go. Yeah. I love Thai food, so it's the least I could do is try to pronounce her name. So, and she will be fighting against Sam Hughes, who maybe Samantha might be her real name. other than that, I don't think we're going to get anything crazy with her. So Sam Hughes, 5-2 with one knockout, 3 submissions. She lost her UFC debut where she got TKO'd. That was against Tisha Torres, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, she fought Tisha Torres. Right. She got TKO'd. Doctor stoppage in between rounds.
Too. Right. Yeah, that's a tough beginning, and she doesn't get a heck of a lot easier for her in her second fight. She will be the bigger fighter here. 4 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, because Lukbunmi technically basically is an atom weight, but 105-pounder, but UFC does not have that division yet, so she is at 115 pounds. If you want Hughes, plus 280. I suggest you don't want her, but if you do. All right, the woman with a bunch of names, more names than a UFC fight card, Luma Lukbunmi. She's 5-2 with one knockout. So if you're going to bet her, I would say go decision. She's not a finisher, at least MMA-wise, she's not a finisher. She does have an extensive Muay Thai background, too, since before moving into the UFC slash MMA. She is 2-1 in the UFC, won her last fight, so she swapped wins and losses. Before that, she was 2-0 in Bellator. Bellator or Invicta? I wrote Bellator. Was
Invicta,
she? It was Invicta, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it was Invicta. Yeah, she wasn't in Bellator. Bellator doesn't have girls that small. She's 4 years younger, striking and active striking and grappling stats are in her favor, but we're talking only one fight for Hughes. And she's a minus 375. I'll be taking her even though she's got a massive line beside her.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I don't love negative 375. I don't like that even a little bit for her. Because, you know, she does have a ton of experience behind her, but you're right. She's an atomweight fighting at strawweight because they won't add an atomweight division. And I actually think if they did add an atomweight division, we'd be talking about her being top 5 to 10 in that division, maybe. You know, like if they invested and actually filled it out. You know, like she's legit. And the thing I love about her the most and I find the most interesting about her, too, is man, her foot trips are just so fun to watch. Like, when she gets in the clinch, you know, a lot of times we talk about Thai fighters having, oh, they got good knees, or oh, they got good elbows. She has for sure got those things, but she also has good trips. And she just puts people on their ass and backs away. So when she feels like she's not getting the upper hand, she just does that and gets away. And I think that that is going to be a big piece for her here against Sam Hughes. Sam Hughes, a fighter who is going to want to turn this into a grappling match, is going to want to bulldog her way in, is going to want to use her size. And I think, you know, Luke Bume just being more technical in doing those types of things where she just tries to you know, trip her and get away from her and then starts kicking the legs and stuff like that. I think that's going to be enough here. And you're right. If you're going to pick Luke Bume, you might as well pick her with the decision prop too, because she ain't going to finish her. But I actually don't think, and I don't have the odds in front of me on that prop, but I don't think those odds are going to be any better really than the negative 375. You might get down into the high negative 200s, but still probably not enough for me to love.
Yeah, that's the most expected outcome here would be Luke Bume versus via decision. So you're going to get a better number, but not a crazy better number. And we're both apparently too lazy to look it up. So we'll just leave it at that. So
put the intern on.
Yeah, we'll put the intern on. So we've got three fights in the books there. We differed on one, but Dan threw out a couple props for you there already. So we're starting early. Before we move on, let me tell you about Roman. Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three putt with a tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to getroman.com/SGP now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships you free with two-day shipping. Whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/SGP and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. So go to getroman.com/SGP now and get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Getroman.com/SGP. Get started now and save $15 on your first month of treatment. All right, moving on to...
So before we move on, I did put the intern on it. Only negative 145 for Luke Bume.
Get on that.
I like that prop. That's a fun prop now.
Get on that, everybody. Get on that. Thank you, intern. Featherweight. Kai Kamaka III, which is an awesome name, versus TJ Brown, who is another Canadian, right?
Yeah. No, I think he's an American.
TJ Brown, is it? That's a total Canadian name, though. I think
he is from Little Rock, Arkansas. He could not be less Canadian, I'm pretty sure.
No. All right. Now I can pick him. Good. All right. He's 14-8 with 4 knockouts and 9 submissions. So we've got ourselves a finisher here in a smaller weight class, a lighter weight class, too. However, 0-2 in the UFC. He won his way in on the Contender Series, so he's 1-0 in Contender Series. He will be the bigger man here, 2 inches taller and 3 inches of reach. He's at plus 135. Kai Kamaka III, 8-3 with 1 submission to his record. That's it, no knockouts. He's not a finisher. 1-1 in the UFC, he got TKO'd his last fight. 2-0 in Bellator, he's 5 years younger, twice more active striker, landing strikes than Brown. Minus 170, I'll be going with my first dog of the day, and TJ Brown here, plus 135.
And I'm going to join you along with that dog, too. Look, I love Kai Kamaka. I thought his debut fight against Tony Kelly, it made me instantly fans of him and Tony Kelly. I'll watch him and Tony Kelly. Either of them fight, no matter who they're fighting, I'll be interested in watching them fight, because I just think they bring a really fun style. But Kai Kamaka in his last fight against Jonathan Pierce, who we'll talk about a little later on, he just looked like he had a lot of trouble with the takedown. And the thing is about TJ Brown, despite his losses, he actually is pretty damn good at wrestling. He was on pace to beat Jordan Griffin. He was taking him down, controlling him, getting into good positions. When he got himself choked out with kind of a dumb submission that he shouldn't have gotten himself stuck in, he got like Marcellitined from top side control. It was some really wild stuff. But I'll just say his grappling is better than his record even suggests. And in addition to that, if you go back out of the regional scene, dude, he's got tons of arm triangle chokes, a couple of rear naked chokes in there. He's got good hands. I just think that this is a fight where he is going to get Kai Kamaka to the ground. And I don't know how long he's been working with James Krause, but my understanding is he is now working with James Krause, which automatically gives you like a 5% submission and grit boost. So, yeah, yep. I'm going to go with TJ Brown here. And like I said, if you want to get super crazy, we're going to go prop crazy on this card.
Whoa.
I don't hate him by submission. I think, well, I think that's a fun prop.
What, 9 out of 14 wins are via submission, so that's not crazy at all. Has Kamaka lost via submission, though? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, because he has so few losses, right?
Right, yeah. He's got 3 losses. I'm going to check real quick. Dan's going to vamp while I check.
Well, while you check real quick, I will tell you that the prop that I just offered you, TJ Brown, so whether or not Kai Kamaga has been submitted may be immaterial.
He is not, no.
Okay, but I am about to tell you that TJ Brown by submission is a big, fat, plus 650. So, you know, again, you might not want to empty the bank account on it, but it's certainly an interesting one.
You don't have to. Yeah, degenerates are all over that one, so you may want to grab that. He's lost twice via knockout, nunce via, via submissions. So, but you say still, that's a pretty enticing number there. Let's move to another featherweight fight. Gabriel Mogli Benitez versus Jonathan JSP Pierce. He stole a nickname from a Canadian of mine, so can I pick him? Does that make him a Canadian or not, even though he's from Tennessee, I think? Is that, we'll see. Let's break it down, and we'll see who Jeff takes, everybody. So Jonathan Pierce is 10-4, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. 1-1 in the UFC. He got TKO'd his last fight. He's 1-0 on the Contender Series. He also is 2-0 in Bellator, so we were talking some high-level experience for this guy. 4 inches taller, 4 years younger, twice more active a striker than Benitez. He's also has grappling stats in his favor. He's plus 175. Benitez, 22-8 with 8 knockouts, 10 submissions, 6-4 in the UFC. He also got TKO'd his last fight. 1-2 in the UFC. Last 2 fights were at 155 pounds, lightweight. This one will be down at featherweight again. He's at minus 225. I've been saying all my picks first, so let's let Dan have the shine here first this time.
I'm going to go with another underdog. I can't believe I'm saying this because
me too.
Like I'm loading up on underdogs on this, especially on the prelims. But I think Jonathan Pierce is wildly underrated. If we're being honest, like he went in there and he had a tough time with Joe Lauzon in his debut in Boston. Right, like who wouldn't have trouble with Joe Lauzon in his backyard with, you know, a whole section dedicated to people wearing Joe Lauzon T-shirts? So like, and in that fight too, you know, his grappling didn't look good, but it's largely because he got hit in the face really freaking hard before they hit the ground. So, you know, the old saying, you know, you hit a black belt in the face and he becomes a brown belt, hit him again and he becomes a purple belt. You know, I think Jonathan Pierce was somewhere near a negative white belt with negative 75 stripes by the time that Joe Lauzon got, you know, ready to really do damage with his grappling. So I think what he did in his second fight is far more interesting. You know, I mentioned he grappled up Kai Kamaka. He looked really good doing it. He's also got not a lot of reach difference in this fight because for some reason Gabriel Benitez's reach measures the same as giant Jonathan Pierce. But he's got a lot of size on him, and I think that that's going to play a lot into this, especially if it gets pressed against the cage, which with Benitez is kind of like reckless, push-forward, aggressive style. I think they're going to wind up clinching up enough that there's going to be the entries there for Jonathan Pierce. He's going to get this to the ground, and I like him to at least win enough rounds via that way to win this fight.
Why do you think we're getting him at plus 175? That's a big number.
I think mostly it's probably a recency bias on Gabriel Benitez because Gabriel Benitez, first of all, he's an AKA guy, and he is coming off of – he had 2 losses in a row. Granted, they were to Sadiq Youssef and Omar Morales, who are good fighters, but then he won by, like, that really fun knee to the body against Justin James that, like, crippled him. And I think people remember that, right? Like, it's a very memorable fight, whereas Jonathan Pierce – did go out, look like a complete fighter against Kai Kamaka, but like in that fight, did he do something that made you go, whoa, Jonathan Pierce? No, he grinded out a guy and then TKO'd him with some ground and pound. And like, yeah, it was a good fight, but like, it wasn't that like highlight reel that everybody remembers. The highlight reel that everybody remembers is getting dropped by Joe Lauzon. So I think part of it's that kind of bias, like seeing the big action. And Benitez has been in the UFC for a really long time, so that could be some of it too. But Yeah, I think this plus number is a steal.
Right. And I did misspeak. Both guys won their last fights via TKO. I believe I said they both lost, but they both won both their fights via TKO. All right, let's take you to an actual Canadian, not someone just stealing a nickname or having a Canadian sign your name. We'll go to the main event currently of the prelims, which will be women's strawweight Randa Markos, the Quiet Storm, who is a Canadian, versus the debuting Luana Pinheiro. Markos, 10-10-1 as a pro with four submissions, 6-9-1 in the UFC. That's she's had a rough go, but she's been, to be fair, she got in the UFC early in her career, and she's been fed a tough diet of fighters. She's lost her last three, has only won one of her last five. Before this, she was in the Tough House, and she was 2-1, Ultimate Fighter. She's got 2 inches of height, 1 inch of reach, grappling stats in her favor, plus 145. Pinheiro is coming here off of a successful Dana White Contender Series performance. This will be her debut. She's 8-1, never been finished, so that was a decision loss. She's got 2 knockouts, 5 submissions. She is a finisher at women's strawweight, surprisingly. She's won 6 straight fights, all via stoppages. 2 knockouts, 4 submissions, very impressive. 7 years younger than Markos, more active striker, and has striking stats in her favor, both. But we're talking about one fight basis for all the striking stats and the grappling stats. And she's at minus 185. I'm going against the Canadian, of course. I'll be taking the fairly unknown Pinheiro. What can you tell us about her and what are your thoughts on the fight?
So usually I crap all over you when you go against the Canadians, but I'm going to ride with you here again, too. The interesting thing about Pinheiro is that like she won her way into the UFC on like a very, very fun striking clinic that she put on Stephanie Frausto, and she dropped her. But the book on her coming in is she's actually a submission artist. Like, she's a really fun submission artist. And if you like you said, when you were reading off that list, you know, she's coming
five
off
of 8 wins.
Yeah, and she's coming off back-to-back knockouts with her hands, so her hands are clearly getting better. And against good competition. Stephanie Frausto is no joke. She beat Helen Harper before that, who, again, you know, maybe not the best record, but she's a fun prospect out of England, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. She was fighting in Brave CF, which is a really good organization to be fighting in, and she was finishing people easy. And I know the background is judo. You know, the obvious comparisons to Ronda Rousey appear whenever somebody comes in with a judo background. But, like, if you think about the people who have given Randa Markos trouble in her career, it's the people who can take down Randa Markos and stop Randa Markos from taking them down, right? Like, look at her last 3 losses. She lost to Kanako Murata, who is an incredible wrestler from Japan. Mackenzie Dern, who's the greatest grappler in maybe women's MMA history, right? Like, she's the Demian Maya of the women's side. And Amanda Hibas, who does an excellent job at stuffing takedowns and has nice stuff herself. Go back before, she lost to Claudia Gadelha. She lost to Nina Nunes. Like, those are just the type of fighters she loses to. Sure, Pinheiro is the newcomer here, but, you know, all of those red flags just pop up way too much, and I think you got to go with the newcomer.
Yep, there you go. Take that, Canadians. I will not bet on you. I will not lose money just because you're a Canadian of mine. All right, so that wraps up the prelims. Let me tell you about our last 2 sponsors, then we will go sponsor-free for the main card. We got a new one here. So Dan will make a trumpet noise now because we have a new sponsor. Go. There we go. Perfect. It's called Underdog Fantasy. And how would you guys like to win $1 million? Because that's what I'm going to tell you how to do. If you haven't played on Underdog Fantasy, you have to check out their fantasy best ball tournaments are some of the best around. Even better is their NFL Draft Weekend Special. Sign up between April 29th and May 4th, and you'll have a chance to win $1 million. That's right, $1 million. When you go to underdogfantasy.com and use the promo code SGPN, you will get $25 free, which you can use to enter their Best Ball Mania 2 tournament. SGP will be running private best ball drafts for the listeners as well. This is a limited time offer that ends May 4th, so go to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGP for your chance to win $1 million. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGP. And as I clear my throat, let me tell you about the last person in the spot where you can see my beautiful face, BetterLand.Vegas. BetterLand.Vegas is like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which is sports betting. The crew over at SGPN are giving out free daily video picks on our BetterLand.Vegas profile page. Mine are run every Saturday that there's a UFC event. I will give you some winning picks, hopefully winning picks. BetOnline Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well, and they have a bunch of free picks and handicappers for you to check out. So make sure you subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And if you want to check out Dan's other family, Top Turtle, go ahead and subscribe to that also. Let's go with the main card on ESPN2, 10 o'clock start. Oh, this is at the UFC Apex. We're back to the small cage and the small crowds in the UFC's home building. So women's flyweight, Poliana Botello versus Luana Carolina. I think this is the first time we've ever had two Luanas on a card, at least in back-to-back fights, probably.
There's a stat for you.
See, that'll help you make your picks here, guys. Let's go with Luana Carolina first. Will we go to pick two Luanas in a row to win? Let's find out. She's 6-2. Two knockouts, one submission. She's 1-1 in the UFC. She lost her last fight via submission. She was 1-0 in the Contender Series. 2 inches taller, 5 years younger than Botello. She is twice more active a striker than Botello. She's at plus 185. Botello's 8-3 with 6 knockouts, 3-2 in the UFC. She lost her last fight. She's only won 1 of her last 3. 2 inches taller, striking stats in her favor, minus 240. Who you got here, Dan? I got a bit of a question mark beside my pick here.
I'm going to go with Botello. I think in this fight, you're right, she only has won 1 of her last 3, but you got to remember that, you know, one of those fights is against Cynthia Calvillo, and the other one is against Jillian Robertson, up a weight class. So, like, yeah, like, of course you don't feel good about losses like that, but, man, those are two tough losses to have on there. She looked great against Ciri Kondo. She looked good against Pro Gonzalez. She looked great against Lauren Muller, but she, like, took care of Lauren Muller. So, like, I'm actually a lot higher on her. When Luana Carolina came into the UFC, I was high on her. I thought her Muay Thai was fun. Her elbows from short range was fun. But it just seems like the aggression she needs in order to be super successful and her ability to control the position is not what it needs to be in order to sort of capitalize on those skills that I think she clearly has. So I think with Botello here, I think she's the right kind of opponent to make Carolina continue to not be able to make good on those. And she probably just controls this fight enough. I have to say I'm not super convinced on either of these two, and it certainly makes – this is a weird fight for me because, like, both of them have weird holes, and you're kind of just wondering which one's going to exploit the other ones quicker. So I kind of think Botello just manhandles Carolina a little bit.
Yeah, I'm picking her, too. I just wasn't a fan of the minus 240 number.
Yeah,
but
it's another one of those ones where you look at the number and you're like, where did we come up with this? And it's got to be that the last time we saw Luana Carolina, she had her knee backwards, like straight up backwards.
That might do it.
And like maybe people are like, well, I don't know how she's going to recover, which maybe is another thing we should, you know, convince ourselves of. Maybe she hasn't recovered. She didn't get full Chris Weidman, but her knee looks bad.
Yeah. No, that's true. That may be the reason, but we have to pick a winner. We have to bet $100 in every fight. Oh, I forgot to tell those ground rules too for the new listeners. You have to bet $100 in every one of these fights. So hopefully you got a big bankroll because you're not going to lose though if you listen to us. So don't worry about that. You just have to have someone back you the money to begin with. All right, bantamweights, Mirab Dvilishvili versus Cody Stamann. Dvilishvili. What is that noise, Dan? Is that a laugh?
It was a laugh. I was trying to restrain my laugh so to allow you to continue to say Mirab Dvalishvili.
Dvalishvili. It sounded like some kind of odd, weird Massachusetts animal I don't know about. All right. Let's break her down, shall we? Cody Stamann or Stamann. You laugh about that, too?
That one's less funny than Dvalishvili.
It is less funny. It's true. He's 19-3-1 with 6 knockouts, 2 submissions, 5-2-1 in the UFC. Lost his last fight. In his last 3 fights, he's had a win, a loss, and a draw. So he's done it all except for no contest. His last 2 fights were at 145-pound featherweight division. This one is down at bantamweight. He's got striking and active striking stats in his favor, plus 185. Mirab Dvalishvili is 12-4 with 2 knockouts, 1 submission. If you're going with him, you probably don't want to pick a finish. He's 5-2 in the UFC. He's won 5 straight fights. So he didn't start off so hot, losing his first 2, but he's won 5 straight. He's got 4 inches of reach, 2 years younger, grappling stats in his favor, minus 240. I'm saying he's going to make it 6 straight after Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm going with Dvalishvili, too. Look, he's a beast. He's so good at wrestling. I think in order to beat him, you have to add in somebody who is going to push him with the striking enough to make him hesitate on his takedowns. Because I don't think matching him grappling for grappling is a good idea in any sort of fight. And I think if you're Cody Stamann, I think you sort of have to live in a realm where you think that you can go, you know, takedown for takedown with him, or you can stuff him enough. And I'm just not sure that that's true about Cody Stamann. I mean, like, if you look at the guys he's lost to, like, he got out-grappled by Aljamain Sterling, who is literally Merab Dvalishvili's number one training partner, and maybe is not even as good at takedowns. Like, he's definitely better at jiu-jitsu, but he's not as good at takedowns as Dvalishvili. I think Dvalishvili in this fight is probably just going to rack up so many takedowns that you give him the decision. I expect Cody Stamann to keep getting up, but I expect Merab to just be on him like a dog on a bone.
Yep. Yeah, this is not a good matchup. And like we said, six straight after Saturday night. Next fight with another big – well, we're getting some fights with some big betting lines here, which is making me pause with my obvious picks. Middleweight, Sean Strickland, Christoph Jotko. Jotko is 22-4 with six knockouts, one submission. Not a finisher. 9-4 in the UFC. He has won three straight, though. Before that, he lost three straight. So maybe he's going to lose three straight going forward. Who knows? I'm all about the math and the patterns. He's got an inch of reach, so we're talking not much there. Negligible. Plus 195. Strickland has come back like a house on fire after a motorcycle accident. He is 22-3. 10 knockouts, 4 submissions. 9-3 in the UFC. So both guys are very, very similar in the UFC careers. He's also won three straight. 2 years younger, more active striker. I think he's moved up to like top five in my performance rankings for middleweight. He's a bit of a sleeper here. But he's apparently the bookies may have been reading my MMA manifesto site because they have him at minus 250, which seems pretty high. I was leaning to picking him, but I'm not sure about that number. Let's talk it over, Dan.
I actually don't feel awful about that number because I will say, you know, when you look back at his record and you're like, he's got some losses on there. He does have losses to Eliza Zaleski dos Santos and Kamaru Usman, right? Like those, not some bad losses to have. And also, you know, you mentioned he had that time off, right? He was away for almost exactly 2 years after a motorcycle accident. He came back as a middleweight. He chose not to go back to welterweight and to continue killing himself with a cut. And he is massive. Like, he's a big dude. He's 6'1", and he's got, like, a very large frame. So, with that being said, and as a matter of fact, did he even miss weight last time? Oh, no, they had it at catchweight. He wound up doing 195.
Right, yeah, it was 190, I think.
That's right,
yeah.
195, I think. So,
was it? Okay.
He's a big dude. The fact that he used to do welterweight, I think, was doing him a disservice. And, man, I could not be more impressed in his hands at middleweight because he was a guy who I thought of as kind of a grappler down at welterweight. And now at middleweight, dude, he jacked up Jack Marshman and was absolutely, like, jawing at him. And then he finished Brendan Allen, who I happen to think is damn good. Like, I'm a big fan of Brendan Allen. So, like, I think those two things combined, like, the fact that he is now in a comfortable weight class – yeah, I don't like the line either, but Christoph Jotko is a guy who's kind of lost some of those fights that you expect him to win, right? Like, he lost to David Branch. He got knocked out by Brad Tavares, which, you know, not to be mean to Brad Tavares, but, like, I feel like Brad Tavares has not finished anybody other than Christoph Jotko since, like, maybe in the UFC? Like, has he ever finished anybody in the UFC other than Christoph Jotko? Like that might be one of those ones we have to put the intern on, but, like, Jocko is not crazy. Okay, the intern just returned. He's really good at what he does. He has one other finish in the UFC. It happened at UFC 125. Get this. UFC 125 when he knocked out Phil Baroni. So, like,
Phil Baroni.
Phil Baroni, of all people. Brad Tavares is not a finisher, and he still had no problem finishing Christoph Jotko. So, hey, like, Strickland with those hands, man, is not a fun person to be standing across if there's any question about your chin.
All right, so I don't feel so bad about the line, then. We will go with Strickland and win a couple bucks. All right, light heavyweights. Ion Cutelaba versus Justin. How about Dustin Jacoby, not Justin Jacoby? he is coming in here late replacement. It's very late. How long has he been here?
Ten days, I think he got the notification.
And I will remind you all of late replacements are only winning 35% of the time since start of 2020, so coming up on a year and a half. So not the odds are stacked against him, to say the least. So Jacoby, 13-5 with 9 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 2-2 in the UFC. He fought in the UFC, ages ago.
A literal decade, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was around 2010, 2011. He lost those two fights. He got re-signed recently, and he's won two fights. So he's 2-2 in the UFC. He's won two straight. He had to fight his way in, though, on the Contender Series. He won a fight there. When he was out of the UFC, he was 0-2 in Bellator, 0-1 in the World Series of Fighting. He has won 4 straight fights now. Like I said, this is very late replacement for him. He's 2 inches taller, 1 inch of reach. Striking stats in his favor. He's at +108, so a slight dog. Kudalaba, 15-6 with 1 no contest, 12 knockouts, 2 submissions. So you may want to pick him via finish if you're going to pick him. He's finished every one of his wins except one. 4-5 in the UFC. He's lost his last 2, only won 1 of his last 4. He got knocked out his last 2 fights. He's 5 years younger, more active striker, grappling stats in his favor, -135. What are you thinking? Gumby.
I think I'm going to go with another underdog here. I think I'm going to take Dustin Jacoby because, you know, you mentioned his record not being great, right? Like, if you go back to those Bellator fights, I mean, you can count the World Series of Fighting fight, but that was World Series of Fighting 1.
Yes, it was.
Their very first event. And, yeah, he made his UFC debut at UFC 137, Penn versus Diaz. He was in the UFC a long time ago. Now, the other thing I really like about him here is that he spent a lot of that time away from the UFC in glory kickboxing. He actually wanted to take in a whole lot of kickboxing fights. Did really well, too. He's going to have more length here than Kudalaba. He's going to obviously have a kickboxing advantage, in my opinion. And we're looking at Kudalaba, who got absolutely jacked up in his last 2 fights. And not to take anything from Magomed Ankalaev, but like, you know, Magomed Ankalaev is kind of like one of those Russian wrestler types. Sure, he's got a couple of knockouts here or there, but like to be knocked silly by Ankalaev 2 times in a row, and yeah, one of them might have been an early stoppage, might not really have been all that early, actually. The second one certainly wasn't. You know, if his brain is, you know, been rattled around a couple of times by a guy who isn't a professional kickboxer, you know, I like the chances of even Jacoby on short notice here coming in and shocking him.
I am taking Kudalaba, so we're going to differ here. Dan was just trying to convince himself that he was taking Jacoby for real reasons, not because he was a guest on the Top Turtle podcast this week, correct?
But did I take both? Oh, no, hang on. We haven't even gotten to the other guest. We'll talk about the other guest in a second.
Yeah, see, Dan is a homer, everybody. He's a homer. Okay, let's go to the co-main event. Featherweights, Cub Swanson, Giga Chikadze.
Didn't get that one either. Giga Chikadze.
Chikadze, fine, Dan. Fine.
Guess who else was on my show this week?
Giga?
Yeah.
Oh, so we know who Dan's picking here. Swanson was not on his show. Swanson's 27-11. 12 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's lost 7 times via submission, but that probably won't play a factor in this fight since he's fighting a kickboxer. 12-7 in the UFC. He's been around forever. He's won 2 straight. Before that, he lost 4 straight. He won via KO his last fight. Before this, he was in WEC. WEC Never Die. 5-3 there, so he's been around forever. Striking and active striking stats in his favor. Grappling in his favor. He's at +135. Chikadze's 12-2 with 7 knockouts, 1 submission, 5-0 in the UFC. He lost in the Contender Series. He lost in World Series of Fighting. He's 0-1 in both of those. He won via TKO his last fight. He's got a 38-6 kickboxing, pro kickboxing record also. 4 inches taller, 4 inches of reach, 5 years younger, -170. He's got to be the choice. The size, the youth, the striking acumen, easy for me to say, he's got to be the choice. Plus, he was on Dan's podcast. So,
yeah, so other than the fact that he was on my podcast, yes, the size is a huge worry for me. But here's the other thing I will say, too. You know, Cub Swanson went on that kind of rough run where some people thought he was going to get cut, right? He had lost 4 in a row. Brian Ortega, Frankie Edgar, Renato Moicano, Shane Burgos. Not a whole lot of shame in any of those fights.
No.
Right? Like, no. Shane Burgos was a split decision, too. He's a guy who's kind of on the fringe of the top 15. The other guys were all, like, you know, ranked anywhere between 2 and 7 in that division. He's come back with two really nice wins. He beat Kron Gracie and Daniel Pineda. But what do you know about Kron Gracie and Daniel Pineda as a, you know, a group of two fighters? They both love to grapple, right? So he went out there and outstruck guys who love to grapple, right? Like, he went out there and told Kron Gracie, no, you can't grapple me. You have to box me. And Kron's not going to outbox anybody. Like, you know, very few people are going to get outboxed by Kron. And he made Daniel Pineda strike with him, too. And, you know, Daniel Pineda didn't look bad striking with him, but he got tagged. Giga Chikadze is not going to get tagged by Cub Swanson. I would be absolutely shocked if he got tagged by him, because I see Giga Chikadze as a guy who's, you know, got some of the stylistic elements of a Hanato Moicano or of a Shane Burgos. He handles range really well. He's probably even more technical with the kickboxing. And, like, you know, for all of those reasons, you know, I just think Chikadze is just too much on the feet for Cub Swanson.
Yep, we are agreeing on that. So do you like him via finish, or what are you thinking?
You know, it's really hard for me to pick Giga Chikadze by finish for a couple of reasons. Number one, you're right. He came out the last time like a bull out of a, or in a china shop. Man, let's get the metaphor right at least. Like a bull in a china shop, and like, that's all he wanted to do was to get a finish, right? Like, it was really important for him to get a finish. But prior to that, he was kind of complacent in the cage to the point where he had almost lost some fights that he was clearly the better fighter in, right? Like, if you look at that fight with Brandon Davis when he, you know, he first got signed to the UFC, it was a split decision. And I 100% think he's a better fighter than Brandon Davis in pretty much every realm. I feel that way about his fight with Jamal Emmers. He won that one by a split decision too. And I just kind of believe that, like, if he had just put the gas on Jamal Emmers, he would have blew him out of the water and looked way better. And then we saw that with his last couple of fights. With the Omar Morales fight, he sort of poured it on. With the Jamie Simmons fight, he poured it on. But I just don't know if we can count on that style all the time, or if, like, Morales and Simmons were just ones he felt like he could do it to. So I always hesitate to pick him by finish, because he is a great kickboxer, but I just don't know if the urgency is there for it.
All right, there you go. One word answer could have been good. You could have said yes or no, but okay.
That's
fine. we got time to burn anyway, guys, so it doesn't matter. Let's go to the main event. Light heavyweights, Dominic Grace, Yuri Prochazka, or Jury Prochazka, if you'd rather.
You got to put Chaz in there.
Chaz, Dan likes Chaz. All right, Dominic Grace, we'll go with first. Former title challenger. A lot of people think he beat John Jones, but technically he did not. Reyes 12-2, 7 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's 6-2 in the UFC. Those two L's have come in his last two fights, though. He's lost 2 straight. That would mean he's inch taller, grappling stats in his favor, but Prochazka's only fought once in the UFC, so we're talking about small samples here. Plus 108, Prochazka 27-3-1 with 24 knockouts and 2 submissions, so he's gotten a decision victory once. 1-0 in the UFC, he won, you guessed it, via knockout. He's won 11 straight fights, 10 of those via knockout. He was the Ryzen light heavyweight champion before he moved into the UFC. He's got 3 inches of reach, 3 years younger, more active striker, but like I said, we're talking about small sample size. Minus 135, I'll take him out of line this small, thank you very much. I will gladly take him at minus 135.
I can't believe he's at this line. I think this is one of the, you know, we talked about a whole bunch of lines being like, ooh, that one's kind of too steep for this. I can't understand why this one isn't way more steep. And again, you know, I feel like we've gone absolute prop crazy today. Yuri Prochazka by TKO or KO is plus 130. Like, he's going to knock Dominic Reyes out. Dominic Reyes, look, I like Dominic Reyes, and I think part of the reason why this line is as close as it is that John Jones fight, right? Like, a lot of people think he beat John Jones. There's a decent argument for saying he did beat John Jones. But I'll say this. John Jones did not take the fight to him, right? John Jones let them play, like, a distance striking fight, basically a point karate fight. And Dominic Reyes could win that fight with him. Dominic Reyes won a similar fight against Volkan Ozdemir and a similar fight against Ovin St. Preux. And the knockouts he does have are over, like, a very worn and weathered Chris Weidman, or, you know, he finished Jared Cannonier in the wrong weight class. And, like, when somebody brings the fight to him, like Jan Blankovic, you saw the holes in his game, right? Like, and I don't mean they're huge gaping holes, and I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, he's terrible. But I think when somebody brings the fight to him and is a power puncher like that, I think there are holes in his defensive striking. And I think Jiří Procházka is just wild enough and just aggressive enough that I think it's almost on 100% chance here that he knocks him out.
There you go. And his hair, have you seen his hair for the fight week?
The yes, he's got, I don't know what to call it.
Yeah,
all.
Some, I can't remember, is it Thai also? Is it a Thai? It's I think it's some sort of striking sport tradition, like a traditional striking sport type hair. So basically his whole head is shaved except for what, like the, where your normal bald spot would be, I guess. And there he's got like it all braided in a huge like ponytail that's sticking up in the hair, in the air, I guess. And it's very hard to describe. Just check him out on Twitter, Jiří Denisa Procházka. I did a horrible job describing this there, but he's got cool hair. That's enough reason to pick him right there. But no, we both like him to win this fight, and Dan says he's going to knock. Well, he wins every fight via knockout, so if you're going to pick him, you may as well take the prop. What did you say the number was, or did you
plus
not say
130.
Plus, I was distracted by his hair at that point. Okay, plus 130. Take it. Plus money, folks. Take it. All right, we gave you lots of props already. So we like Procházka versus via knockout at plus 130. What else?
TJ Brown by submission at plus 650.
Yes. That's a degenerate play.
That's a huge degen play, and you know what? I couldn't love it any more than I do right now.
All right, there you go. Now we will go with our locks. I finally lost my lock. I am, 5-1? 6-1 on my locks. Ha, ha, ha. Plus 38%. Dan is 3-4, minus 30, almost 30%, minus 29%. Is it your turn or my turn first? I can't remember. I always lose track of this.
I never remember either, but I'm going to cede to you.
Okay. I'll take Procházka, please, and thank you. I'll just take him to win. Don't worry about the prop bet. We'll just take him to win. Minus 135 is nice enough for a lock pick, so he'll be my lock pick.
Yeah, and I'm going to take Giga Chikadze. Right. I think those two top fights are two of the easiest to pick and the two of the juiciest odds. If you like playing negative odds, right? If you like playing underdogs, there are tons on this card that are sort of fun. There are tons of props in there that you can get plus money at, but, you know, if I'm looking for good value here, I think Giga Chikadze to outstrike Cub Swanson is close to a slam dunk as you're going to get.
There you go. It's actually a pretty decent card. Now we went through it. The main event should be fun. Lots of fun.
For as long as it lasts.
It should be fun. Yeah. You think Procházka, he's right in line for a title shot. If he wins this one, via violent fashion, would you not think so?
I have to assume he is, especially if it's violent. Violent like it was again. Like, I mean, he just absolutely slept Volkan Ozdemir. And not that light heavyweight doesn't have a lot of, like, fun and interesting options, but, like, ones that, like, get people excited. You know, I love Glover Teixeira getting a title shot. Good for him. Like, I could not be happier for the 43-year-old journeyman. But, like, that doesn't get you excited, right? Like, you're probably pretty certain he's going to get flatlined by Jan Blankovic because Jan Blankovic punches really freaking hard. And what you want to see Jan Blankovic go against is somebody else who punches really freaking hard. So I think Jiří Procházka is just easy to sell from that point. He also has got a pretty large fan base, being, you know, a European guy who fought most of his career in Asia and has now come to the U.S. And people seem to be taking to him pretty well in the U.S. because he's a great personality. So, yeah, I think he comes out here and puts Dominic Reyes to sleep in a round, and we're definitely talking about him getting the winner of Glover and Jan.
There you go. Should it be fun. And then the week after, like next week coming up, was supposed to be Sanhagen versus Dillashaw, but TJ Dillashaw's got a nasty cut above his eye, so he's out of that fight. Looks like they're going to make a women's strawweight belt the main event versus Michelle Waterson and Marina Rodriguez, and Waterson's going to get slaughtered. But
I had not seen that until you just literally said those. Like, I'm reacting to this in real time right now.
Yeah.
Why
Rodriguez is going to kill her?
Why?
Because Waterson is someone that they can plug and play in a main event at short notice. That's why. But yeah, this isn't a good matchup for her.
She's probably going to be great for the marketing of Marina Rodriguez too.
That's true.
She's going to come out looking very nice.
Yes. I don't think there's any other really big news. I still have way too much Jake Paul on my news feed, so I wish that would stop, but it's every day I get multiple Jake Paul from reputable MMA sites. I'm getting a bunch of Jake Paul headlines. Other than that, do you think there's any news that we should hit on, or can we put this one to bed, you think?
Nah, I think we could put this one to bed. You just gave me weird excitement that suddenly there is a main event next week that isn't the one I wanted, because I was pretty bummed Dillashaw isn't going to get his head taken off by Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah, such a likable guy.
Yeah, I love Corey Sandhagen is like the nicest dude on the planet, yeah. And TJ Dillashaw is not that. And so when you tell me I get one-sided violence, I'm probably going to appreciate that in that place.
He's a sick, sick man, everyone. He's a sick guy. Make sure you follow him for all his sick thoughts over at Gumby Vreeland on Twitter. That's a segue. And I would be Jeff Fox Reicher. What else can you do until we hit you, your earlobes again? Maybe not your earlobes, maybe your ear holes. You can read our stuff on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. I will have a written breakdown of all the fights. Should be there Thursday morning, or maybe not morning. Yeah, give me till the afternoon, please. Thursday afternoon. And Dan says he's working on some stories for the site too. I'll believe it when I see it. And then also MMA-manifesto.com. Dan does have an article on there. I just printed today, published today. I guess we don't print things anymore. Luma Lukbunmi is his prelim pick of the week, the one to look out for. So check out that, and while you're there, make sure you enter our Pick'em contest, because the good bosses at Sports Gambling Podcast are giving away $50 to whoever wins that contest. So, and make sure you obviously follow our new feed, and make sure you give us 5 stars because we deserve it, because we're the best. Make sure you comment on how I carry the show and Dan is dead weight. If you think otherwise, do not comment, please. If you're my 10-year-old son, do not comment, please. Because I know what your comments are, and I do not want them in the public realm. Other than that, all I have to say, like I say every week, is au revoir, mes amis.